Okay, I am calling to order this meeting of the House Children, Families, Finance, and Policy Committee. Apologies to everybody for starting just a couple minutes late. I'm Dave Pinto, the chair of the committee, and we're going to start, as always, with the clerk taking the role. We have a new person in that position, and Ms. Parkman, if you can please take the role.
Chair Pinto?
Present.
Representative Keeler? Present. Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Bliss? Representative Coulter?
Present.
Representative Davis?
Present.
Representative Hansen? Representative Hemmingson Jaeger?
Present.
Representative Hicks excused. Representative Hudson? I believe may have been on Zoom.
I think Representative Hudson is logging on right now.
Okay. Representative Katiza Watun?
Present.
Representative Lee?
Present.
Representative Nelson? Representative Perez Vega?
Present.
Representative Zeleznikar?
Present.
We have a quorum present.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Parkman. And I will note if we have folks joining us, quite a few testifiers, but also maybe some members via Zoom, if people note somebody who was not present. Yeah, Representative Katiza Watun?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to confirm that the microphones are on and that people online can hear us. This is a different room than we're used to, so just wanted to double check.
Let's see. We've got somebody up. Can you give us a thumbs up if you can hear us? Well,
I think the AV is on.
We think the AV is off. Okay, we were told that the sound was on by the sergeant, so we're going to check that out. We're going to see what we can do on that. Because, yes, thank you, Representative Katiza Watun. Want to make sure folks can hear us. Okay, we're making sure. We've got Jessica Gilder on our Zoom. If you can hear us, can you give us a thumbs up with your little Zoom thumbs up button? And also not a thumbs up, so which counts as a thumbs down in this context. So we are working on it. Somebody online can hear. Okay, well, that's good. We can just make sure everybody online can hear.
Can we hear them?
Oh, that's
because
Josh and Hudson
are online. Okay. Representative Hudson, we can see. Can you hear us, Representative Hudson? Or maybe not. Okay. I do not see Representative Hudson giving us the thumbs up saying he can hear us. Oh hey! There we go. Representative Hudson just gave a thumbs up. So I am going to assume that we can be heard. Just for the folks joining us via Zoom, we had some doubt about that. Oh, Representative Lee?
Can we hear that?
Can we hear you? Well, let's see. Representative Hudson, would you mind unmuting and we'll test with you, sir? Oh, you're muted. Okay. Testing 1, 2, 3, Representative Hudson? We cannot hear you. So, isn't it always, it's always technology. So, we're working on in the front of the room. So, Representative Hudson, we are not able to hear you. I gather you can still hear us. So, now we're going to work on both
check
directions.
Check.
Oh. Now we're hearing. Okay, Representative Hudson, could you try again?
Testing. Yeah, I think there was an issue with my mic.
Oh, okay. Nope, we can hear you. So, okay, and I'm gathering the other folks online are able to hear us too, I'm hoping. I should note for purposes of the roll call, I see Representative Hansen online, and so we want to make sure she's noted as being in. Representative Nelson as well. I can't remember if he had been noted, but both of those folks are joining us in addition to Representative Hudson in terms of members. Additionally, and so can I ask Jess Gilder? I see you. Can you give us a thumbs up if you can hear us?
Hey, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you too. Okay, good. All right, I think we're all good. Thank you, Representative Katiza Watun. I think we have most of us. I know Representative Hicks is excused. I kind of think we have almost everybody else. So apologies for the delay there, but I think we're in good shape now. Members, good to be with all of you. I'm so glad that we're gathering. So just to set the stage for today. As members of the public are very aware, we made some really transformational investments that passed through our committee and then through the House and the Senate, signed by the governor, in a number of areas within our committee's jurisdictions. That included helping Minnesotans experiencing homelessness, helping Minnesotans experience food insecurity, helping Minnesotans experiencing economic instability, those with kids especially, and making sure that our programs to address those needs are really enhanced. We made significant investments, and there's going to be more to do. We know that there's more to do in those areas, and we'll continue to have discussions. I wanted to focus today on an additional area, the area of child care and early learning, and have a discussion about that, and especially to get to hear from Minnesotans about the impact of what passed this past spring, both in the really good ways and then to hear about gaps that remain. And I'm aware of one in particular that I'll identify in just a second. So the plan today is, after I finish a few introductory remarks, we're going to hear from a number of testifiers. You've got a list on the agenda of the folks testifying. And these are community members of various kinds from various locations in the state to hear from folks. And then we will then hear from someone with First Children's Finance who works in the economics of child care and early learning, have a discussion about that, and then hear about a proposal to address particular needs for families going forward. And that is the plan for today. We will not be taking votes. We do not have bill language, but we have is an idea that we're going to be driving and leading up to. Before we begin, are there any questions about the agenda from anybody? Checking on that. Okay, not seeing any. So then just a few more just introductory thoughts from me. As members will recall, we have we had discussed in the spring that early care and learning is a crisis throughout the state. We're going to hear more about the ways that it's been a crisis for families in terms of being able to afford and access those services. We've also are going to talk a little bit later about what a squeeze it is for people providing this most critical service in our society. I just want to make sure to set the stage a little bit, though. If we go to the next slide, Mr. Rohrer. The fact that this is indeed a crisis throughout our state. If you look in the, this is showing the gap in, and my apologies that the, it's a little bit tough to read those, some of the information there. I'm not quite sure what the problem is. But this is showing the white area in each of the regions of the state is showing the gap in the number of spaces that are needed to accommodate children under six with both of their parents working. And we'll see that in the northwestern part of the state, where Vice Chair Keeler is from, there's a gap of 56%. In the southern part of the state, where Lee Daniels is from, a gap of 24%, and continuing all throughout the state. And if we go to the next slide, Mr. Rohrer, noting that this is a crisis for our employers as well, not something we focus so often on in our committee, but recognize the number of employers who mention childcare as a barrier to attracting and retaining talent, that that is at least weekly in almost all regions of the state, with the exception being the Southeast, where, well, pardon me? Oops. Online is not able to see the slides, okay, is what I'm hearing. All right, we're just going to pause for a second.
They're online on an email.
They are with the committee page, but we certainly want to make sure that folks on the Zoom, I know we're going to have a speaker a little bit later who will have slides as well. We want to make sure that we get that addressed. So Ms. Colburn is working on that. I think what I'm going to do is while we work on that, I'm going to keep on going, and then we're going to see what we can find out. And members of the public who are watching online will attempt to put those back up for you. I will note the slides. It's just four that I have, or five, I guess, that are on our committee webpage, so we encourage you to go there. But just noting that employers mention childcare as a barrier to attracting and retaining talent, in other words, a slowdown for economic development, at least weekly in most of the parts of the state. In the Southeast, being an exception, that they mention it monthly as being most often, but a real concern. So just want to remind folks, and this is last couple slides. If you go to the next slide, Mr. Rohrer, in 2021, the state established a Great Start for All Minnesota Children Task Force by the then DFL Majority House and GOP Majority Senate to establish three goals. And you'll see them, those who can see the slides anyway, three goals listed, one relating to affordability, a system where a family costs for this critical service are affordable. Another one, accessibility, making sure that access is not determined by the child's income in particular, but also where they live in the state and their race. And then thirdly, that the people who do this work are compensated equitably and that they can actually support themselves in the work that they do. So three goals, affordability, access, and compensation. We're working on having those of you online be able to see these slides. Apologies for that. And then when you're ready, Mr. Rohrer, have you go to the next slide. And this is the final slide that I have, just to remind us all at a high level of the work that was done this past session. So we did a lot regarding access, investing in a number of different programs to address child care and early learning. including child care assistance, early learning scholarships, Head Start, and school-based pre-K. These programs and those investments were, in general, aimed at kids from the lowest income and the most vulnerable families, and generally that's the lowest 25% of incomes. We also invested in compensation through the Great Start compensation supports to increase wages and other workforce supports. So if you are just thinking, I'd said affordability, access, and compensation. We've got access, we've got compensation. Something that was not addressed so much this past spring was affordability for families. There was a proposal that was heard in another committee for a child independent care tax credit, and that's something that did not end up advancing. And so we did a lot for access, a lot for compensation, less so for affordability. More to discuss that on that later in the session, later in this hearing. But for now, what I'd like to do is then call on our various testifiers and move on to that. Just pausing to see if anybody has anything else. Mr. Representative Daniels, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair Pinto. This lot of work was done this last session for child care. But I'm not sure if you are aware of the Minneapolis Tribune, that article came out November 3rd with the neglect and the basically, you know, murders of these young people. And I wonder if that would be something we could put our attention to, since we are in the business of keeping the people safe. I read the article, and it's just horrifying what these children have gone through. You know, the first one was a two-year-old girl was beaten to death by her mother, and then the second article was a 17-year-old girl who committed suicide because she had been repeatedly sexually assaulted and abused. And so just wonder if we could spend a little time on that, maybe this next session.
Thank you so much, Representative Daniels, for raising that. What I want to do is encourage members, and thank you for calling it out. There was an article in the Star Tribune starting a series from last Sunday, so 8 days ago, I suppose. I think the series is called In Harm's Way, and I would certainly urge members, as you've said, Representative Daniels, take a look at the article. I'm happy to talk with members and work with them, and I would expect that certainly we'll be considering proposals relating to child protection, and happy to work with you and others on that. That'll definitely be something that we'll want to do this coming session, and continue the discussion. So thank you, though. Thank you for raising that. And members, I really urge you to take a look. So moving to the first testifier then is Jessica Gilder from the Initiative Foundation, Little Falls. We'll have you please join us. And then if you can please just identify yourself and then begin speaking. And by the way, I'm asking folks to, I think we've said, keep it to about 4 minutes if you can per person. And Ms. Gilder, please feel free to begin.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Pinto and members of the Minnesota Children and Family Finance Committee. Please just excuse the fact that I'm reading so I can keep it short. My name is Jessica Gilder, and I live in Little Falls, and I work in Little Falls, and I was recently hired at the Initiative Foundation as the Child Care Solutions Program Officer. I came into this position after many years of being a child care provider and working in the early child industry. I still come seeking solutions for families. I come before you today, though, as a mother, a grandmother, and an advocate for middle-class working families seeking affordable child care. I ask that you also come before and work together with each of us on child care solutions for middle-class families. The lack of quality child care for middle-class families is not new. Many years ago, when I was a young parent, I was seeking quality, affordable childcare, and my family didn't qualify for child care assistance. I worked in the early childhood field, and my husband was a blue-collar worker, entry level. We decided to start a home child care. In our business, we served Head Start families in a partnership program, and they were working families. When Head Start funding ended, we no longer had families who could afford the child care and the quality that I had. They left, and I also left the business, unfortunately. I left the early childhood sector to work as a case manager in human services, and I worked with the Workforce Innovation Program Act programs, working with clients who were working towards employment and who many of them were women who wanted to work, but they couldn't afford child care. Over the course of the many years that I've worked in case management, I've heard families tell me about lack of affordable childcare and how it's affected them, not just my family. I continue to hear these stories over and over. I witnessed how lack of access to affordable quality childcare not only resulted in job instability, but also poor mental health and child welfare issues, as you just indicated. I became a grandmother, and I still continue to see lack of affordable childcare affect my family. My daughter quit her job in the healthcare industry because she struggled to find affordable childcare for her infant and toddler. To make up for lost wages, her partner went over the road truck driving. This doesn't allow for much family time and increased duties for grandma. Lack of affordable childcare continues to be a problem for all families, despite some of the recent direct funding directed towards the childcare industry. But these funds don't help families, not all families with affordability. The middle-class working families still need better solutions. I came here today because I recognize the need to speak for all people who are affected by the lack of affordable, sustainable childcare. Quality, affordable childcare is for everyone, not just the families who need it. For early childhood educators and care providers who deserve to be paid accordingly for the essential services that they provide. Quality, affordable childcare is for employers who are seeking employees working in all sectors, all regions with varied shifts throughout our state. Quality, affordable childcare is for all families, is for everyone who wants to build a stronger economy so that we can also all thrive. Thank you, Chair Pinto and the committee, and thank you for letting me share my story. I hope you join me in seeking solutions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Gilder. Thanks for your work. Carson Starkey is up next, and then after that will be Tracy Hill. I'll note that Amy Swanson is not able to join us, but there'll be another testifier joining in person. So Carson Starkey, if you can please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carson Starkey. I'm the parent of two kids, two daughters. One is a four-year-old, Llewellyn. The other is a one-year-old. Her name is Dolores. So I live in St. Paul. I'd like to start by thanking you all here at the committee for the investments that you all have made in the past year to continue funding voluntary pre-K. My four-year-old daughter attends pre-K at Nokomis North Montessori in St. Paul. We're thrilled about the experience she's having there. So that said, my one-year-old is attending an in-home daycare, and every day I see the development and the learning that takes place there in a quality home-based childcare program. My four-year-old attended the same program as the one-year-old. So it's called Kia's Love Bugs. It's run by a woman named Nakia Howard. We are very happy with her. I'm of the opinion that it defies common sense that folks don't have public help for child education until kids reach the age of four. Babies and toddlers are learning. Their care and education is expensive. Child care programs can be run like a McDonald's in some kind of race to the bottom, but I don't think that's a good model. Sure, these places are businesses, but they are also community institutions, and the people that work in them are contributing to raising our children. I think their work needs to be rewarded as such. And if not for the good luck of getting a free public preschool slot, my family would be paying probably more than $20,000 this year in expenses related to early child care. And that cost can be overwhelming and can drown a lot of young families at a time when they're just becoming established. So it isn't as if the hardworking people in small businesses or small business owners who provide child care to my daughters are getting rich from that work. Far from it. The educators that care for our youngest don't get compensated at amounts anywhere near those folks who educate my four-year-old. And neither group is adequately compensated, in my opinion, for the invaluable work they do for our society. And so I would urge the committee to step in to correct two glaring issues. Child care expenses crushing working families and the crisis of undercompensation for the workers who are helping to raise and educate our babies. So I appreciate your all's time, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Starkey. And moving to Tracy Hill, and then after that will be Brittany. I'm not sure how to pronounce your last name, but it begins with a KJ. And so I'll call on Tracy Hill. If you can please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Tracy Hill. I'd like to thank you guys for your time and patience this morning. I'm coming to you. I kind of have a unique perspective, just like Jessica. I started off working in early childhood for 18 years. Right now, I am a Mimi recently. She'll be three soon, and we dip back into early childhood again. My teenager had a baby during COVID. We weren't prepared. We had 4 months to get ready for and had no clue of what we were going to do for childcare. Thankfully, we were able to Zaria into Bloom Early Childhood, where I used to work at. And the director there, Mary, made sure that my daughter had access to a grant that provides childcare for my granddaughter until she starts kindergarten. What a godsend that is, because we can't afford it. We're not getting any help from Zaria's other parent, and it's pretty much on me and my husband to provide these things for my granddaughter. I just want to point out that the common theme that I'm hearing for other people that are testifying is that we're all out here just trying to find some good, and the key word I feel like is quality care in there. Not everyone has access to that, but like some other people have said, we all deserve that for our kids. I know for me to go to work every day, I work at a high school, and for me, my peace of mind is so good when I drop Zari off because I know she's going to be so well taken care of. And I just feel like I know not everyone gets that or has access to that or can afford it. I know for me, this grant has helped as far as my granddaughter and as well as my children when they were also attending early childhood because I couldn't afford it while I was working in early childhood. I couldn't afford to send my kids to daycare and work there as well. It just wouldn't have worked without the childcare assistance that I received as well. I just really want to tell you guys, I appreciate, you know, you putting in the funding for these grants. They're much needed, much appreciated. And early childhood is something that's near and dear to my heart. And I feel like we should pour into our kids early in life, especially if we want to see things, you know, turn around for them. I'm on the other end of the aspect. I'm in a high school, and you can see that some of them were lacking in early childhood initiatives. So just, we really appreciate the time and the effort that you guys put in to make sure that our kids, I know for me especially, get quality care. That's much needed and much appreciated.
Thank you so much, Tracy Hill. Thanks for your testimony.
Representative Davis. I was straining my ears to hear Tracy. Could we get just a little more
volume? Yeah, I think we've, thank you, Representative Davis, for asking that. A concern is the volume. We've got in the room as high as we can go. I might ask folks if you could please, thank you, Representative Davis, for raising that. If we could please ask testifiers on Zoom to just do all that you can to be right into your microphone and speak as loudly as you can, we'd appreciate that. The next testifier after this one will be Chantel Gruba from Iron Range Tykes Learning Center. But first, we have the parent from Mountain Iron, whose name I was struggling with. And so if you can please identify yourself and proceed. And again, we're just a reminder to be close to your mic.
Hi there. Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee.
Good sound. Thank you.
Well, you picked a good one to go next and be loud. I'm very good at that.
Yeah.
My name is Brittany Chenis. I live in northern Minnesota with my husband and 3-year-old daughter. I appreciate the opportunity to share my story with you today. My daughter is extremely smart. I blame it on her childcare center, Iron Range Tykes. It's why I drive 15 miles there in the morning to drop her off, 15 miles back home to work remotely, and I do the same thing when my work day is done. Because of the education she is getting, it is incredible. We have a few other options for childcare a little closer to home, but they are not high-quality options, and sadly, I would have concerns for my child's safety if I sent her to one of them. Even just a small dip in quality can really be scary, which is why I believe so strongly that the high-quality childcare should be available for all Minnesota families. Unfortunately, as you all are aware, that's far from our reality. My husband works as a minor, and I work remotely in healthcare supply chain management. We waited until we were in our 30s to start a family and financially stable. It is not an exaggeration to say that the decision was based on the cost of childcare. She is our only child, and unless something changes in the cost of childcare, she will remain our only child. We pay more for childcare than we do our mortgage, and there's no way we could double that and still afford to live. There are a lot of factors that go into a family's decision about how and when to grow their family, and I never thought that childcare costs would end up being one of those that overrode every other one. It shouldn't be this way, and it isn't this way in nearly every other country in the world. In Germany, a parent is given 3 years of parental leave from their job, and they're guaranteed a job to go back to, and free childcare after. here, the fear that I would have is I wouldn't have a job to go back to if I opted to stay home with my child for the 5 years prior to school. It happens all the time, and mostly to moms, to not have a job to return to. The only way to reduce costs for families is through public funding. Childcare providers are operating as leanly as they possibly can without compromising quality. There are no cuts to be made. In fact, to keep quality high, families are being asked to pay even more. Our weekly rate is increasing by $15, and that doesn't seem like much at first, but it's $60 a month and $720 a year, and that's a lot for families. Public funding that cuts the cost of childcare for families would be hugely impactful. For us, we'd be able to make choices again. We'd be able to buy healthy food at the grocery store instead of prepackaged stuff. We'd be able to have time to make healthy meals because my husband wouldn't have to work overtime to play catch up on our bills. We'd have more time with our daughter. My husband would have more time with her. If we paid a few thousand dollars less for childcare, we'd be able to take our daughter to the zoo, go see a movie, and even plan a fun road trip, because we'd finally be able to, without the stress of how much money it would cost at the end. We'd be able to have money to let our daughter take dance lessons or learn to play hockey or maybe even become a doctor. We'd have room to breathe, and we'd be back to making our own decisions about our money instead of having them made for us. Every Minnesota family deserves to afford their lives, and making childcare affordable is a concrete and necessary step to making that possible. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Chenis. I hope I'm saying your name. I think
you are. Good
hey,
job.
Excellent. Thank you. After the next testifier will be Nicole Flick from ABC 123 Child Enrichment Center in Dilworth. But first, we're going to have Chantel Gruba. So if you could please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Chantel Gruba, and I'm from the Iron Range. Besides being a child care center owner and director, I am also a leader with Kids Count on Us. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today and share my perspective as a child care provider in northern Minnesota on the many challenges in child care, but in particular on the issue of affordability for families. I have worked as a child care provider for over 20 years before building and opening my own facility, Iron Range Tykes Learning Center, in November 2018, with the mission to provide high-quality child care in a safe and nurturing environment. We work incredibly hard to live out that mission every single day because we see what a difference it makes in the lives of our children and the families. But providing high-quality child care is incredibly expensive. I just notified my families that we have to raise our rates to make ends meet because the cost of everything has gone up. Every time we raise our rates, we naturally lose families because they have to weigh the costs. At what point do they not make enough money to pay for child care? At what point do they decide that in order to make ends meet, they need to find a child care option that has much lower quality? This is a horrible decision to be forced to make. I have a family of six who recently pulled three of their four children from my center because of the cost. They found alternative care options of grandparents and relatives for those three children in order to afford the weekly tuition for just one child. To add to that frustration, this family, and 98% of all of my families I provide care for, have what are considered to be great jobs in the rural area. They work in mining and healthcare. But these great jobs are not enough for them to afford their lives, and childcare costs are a huge part of that. Every child and family deserves access to high quality and affordable childcare. But as a society, we place nearly the full burden of paying childcare on families, which makes it impossible for Minnesota families to afford. The national recommendation is that families pay no more than 7% of their annual income for childcare. In Minnesota, less than 10% of families make enough money to say that they are paying no more than 7% of their annual income for childcare. Most families come nowhere even close to this 7%. I'm thankful for the steps that the legislature has made last session in funding childcare. The Great Start compensation support payments were critical in keeping childcare centers' doors open. But childcare has been underfunded for decades, so we have a lot of catching up to do, and we have a lot of change that needs to happen before the catching up. For example, the reimbursement rate was raised for childcare assistance program. This was an overdue and necessary change. The income limit for families remains the same as it was, though, which is far too low. A family of four must make less than $55,000 annually to qualify for assistance. That means a family of four that makes $56,000 annually doesn't qualify. How can a family with an annual income of $56,000 possibly afford to meet even their basic needs while paying up to $15,000 for child care per child annually? The answer is they can't. It's impossible. Once a child starts kindergarten or pre-K, we collectively pay for their public education through public funding. Yet all the data shows that 0 to 5 is the most crucial learning time in life. Childcare and early learning deserves public funding so parents aren't forced to choose between working and having children. Childcare providers are providing all the help we possibly can, and families are bending over backwards to try to make things work. But families desperately need and deserve help. I'm relieved to know that legislators are making serious, concentrated efforts to address child care affordability for families this legislative session. I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Gruba. Thanks for your work for kids. And then our final virtual testifier is Nicole Flick. We're so grateful to have you with us. If you can please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Nicole Flick, and I own ABC 123 Child Enrichment Center in Dilworth, right outside the Fargo-Moorhead area. I'm also a leader with Kids Count on Us. Thank you for the Zoom option, because it's very hard to be able to leave, but the Zoom option gives us a chance for our voice to be heard. If you have a leaky roof, do you just patch it and hope for the best, or do you stop the leak, fix the problem, and prevent future damage? This is it. It's now or never. Because I can tell you that the child care providers won't be here when you finally put those preventative measures in place. Mm-hmm. And it will all have been for nothing, and the damage will have already been done. Last session, we put money into helping the teachers receive higher wages. We made the Great Start compensation payments permanent. We put money into the Child Care Assistance Program and Early Learning Scholarships. We got people who qualify for CCAP off the wait list. For this, we are extremely grateful. That was a decent patch on a big leak for the Twin Cities. However, the CCAP rates in rural Minnesota didn't change because they were based on pre-pandemic rates from almost 4 years ago. Here's the problem. We priced the private pay families or any family of four making more than $55,000 a year out of the market. And one of those parents are now staying home because the average cost of care in rural Minnesota for an infant is $17,000 a year. In the Twin Cities, over $21,000 a year. It's cheaper to stay home. You are losing your workforce every day. Every week, I get another family leaving my center to find cheaper, more affordable care. And when they realize it doesn't exist, they choose to stay home. And when I don't have enough children, I can't operate. The local public school in my area opened up a preschool in their school this year. They hired high school students at $15 an hour. They hired union bachelor degree teachers. They have school readiness resources like counselors, nurses, administration, professional development. I lost over 50% of my preschool class to this new program. Why? Because it's $100 a week less than what I charge. Not because they are better, because they are cheaper. They can afford to charge less because they raise their property taxes and it funds through the schools. I'm not charging people high tuition because I want to. I'm charging them what I have to survive. So now I'm in this cyclone of doom. I actually have staff since my enrollment dropped so much, but I can't keep them because I can't afford to pay them without a certain amount of children. If I don't have enough kids, I can't pay my bills. No one wants to pay $17,000 to $21,000 a year when they can stay home instead and figure out a one-parent household income. As child care providers, we cannot sustain this. Without staff, we don't get as much money for Great Start compensation. Without children, we don't get the money we need to survive. And we have created this cyclone vacuum where only low-income or extremely high-income families can afford care. According to Minnesota Public Radio, 50% of Minnesotans are considered middle class and make an average of $77,000 a year. You just price those 50% of people out of the workforce because they can't afford childcare. Parents no longer have a choice of where they want to send their child for birth to five. They're forced to choose the cheapest option, not what's best for their children. Every child is different. Every program is different. Every family is different, and they deserve the right to choose where they want to send their child. You have $2.8 billion to spend. The government has no problem bailing out auto manufacturers, banks. You even bailed out the entertainment industry. Let's fix the leak and prevent more damage. Child care is infrastructure. We are the roads to the future. When will our children and families be the priority? Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Flick. Thank you for your powerful words and for your work for kids. I had the chance to meet Ms. Flick, I guess it was a month and a half ago or so, 2 months ago, under leadership of her legislator, Representative Keeler, and you can see the power coming through even virtually. So glad to have you with us. So we're done with the virtual testifiers, and I'm going to call Vanessa Robertson up. And there you are. Look at you. And so if you can please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony. So glad to have you with us today.
Hello, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Vanessa Robertson. I live in St. Michael and I direct a child care center in Ramsey, Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to share both my personal experiences with child care affordability and what I see each day. I do have three examples to share: a family I recently met, a family that I currently serve, and my own experience. Last week, a family did come into our school to do a tour. We were very excited to roll, and when we started talking about tuition, their faces fell. They were very honest about the fact that this was out of reach for tuition costs. I did speak to them about our child care assistance and early learning scholarships. They did say they'll look into it, but I haven't heard back from them, and I don't expect to, as this is something that happens pretty much all the time whenever we do a tour and it's out of reach. The families want to enroll, but then they find out how much it costs per week, and then they find out they earn way too much to qualify for any type of child care assistance or scholarships. The child care system is nowhere near affordable for a lot of them, and they're pretty shocked about that. I don't know what exactly happens to these families. Are they able to find a cheaper option? Do they not feel as good about that cheaper option that they have for their child? Do they piece it together with family and friends, or do they stay home? Right now, we currently have openings in both our infant and preschool classrooms, spots where we can take children right away, but the barrier we're hearing more often from interested parents is that they just can't afford it. I even hear it from my own teachers who are parents too, and which is beyond scary, because if I lose my teachers because they cannot afford child care, that's even more families that's left in their lurch that can't afford it. At my school currently, we have a family that's a family of five, and they have three children enrolled in our system, which is very expensive to have three kids. Right now, it costs them $4,824 a month for all three children, and that's for full-time care with a sibling discount, as they have an infant, toddler, and preschooler, which averages out to be $57,888 for a family to have three children enrolled full-time. Just for a quick comparison, my oldest son started college at the University of Minnesota this past year. His tuition is $16,178 a year. This family that I have two parents that both work, but I honestly don't know how much longer they can afford that child care bill per year, which causes them to definitely fall behind on payments, which is hard as they rely on us, and we try to give grace when we can. However, we're partners in the child care and education of children, but we're not bean counters. We have to manage our expenses too, which we do try to give them grace and allow them to try to play catch up, but it is becoming harder. So for moments of time, they do have to cancel care and stay at home for a little bit. I don't know what happens to these children when they're at home. It is incredibly stressful for parents and children to have to piece together emergency care during those times. How exactly do they work while their children don't have child care? I'm not really sure how much longer they can do this, and I'm not sure how much longer we can either. And then finally, my own experiences with child care. I went through a divorce 3 years ago, and I needed to re-enter the workforce from staying at home. I'm a licensed teacher, and I was working for a school district, and I could not believe the child care costs that I faced as a single mother. However, as I was sitting down looking at my budget, I realized I could not afford child care, and I did not qualify for any assistance. It wasn't really easy because I moved here from North Carolina, so there was no family. I did utilize a friend who was able to watch my daughter part-time, and the other time she went to a child care center for half the time. I was beyond amazed for how much it cost for just half-time care. But I was grateful to have a friend who could honestly watch her part of the day. But even though I felt my daughter was safe, it wasn't necessarily the environment I wanted her in. When she was at the school, she was getting assessments, curriculum, learning experiences across all five domains of the child development, which is critical for children birth to grade five. She also didn't have other children to kind of build social skills with. But it wasn't ideal, but I made it work for my family. And a lot of families don't have that. I do believe it's beyond time that if something is done of growth amongst this big, huge group of families who currently can't get help for childcare experiences. Quality childcare isn't a luxury, nor is it a nice to have. I feel like it's an essential for parents and for children who parents need it. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you so much for being with us, Ms. Robertson. Thanks for your work in a bunch of areas. Appreciate you providing your input. Mallory Plotz is our final testifier. No, the name is not on the list, but she had submitted a written statement, and we weren't able to be joined by a virtual testifier, so we're going to sort of substitute in Ms. Plotz. As she's walking up, I just want to note there's another written statement from someone who's not testifying, Daniel Rogge, R-O-G-G-E. Hope I'm saying that last name correctly, but I'd urge members to read that statement as well, describing his experience in terms of needing to afford child care and early learning. So, and Ms. Plotz, if you can please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Mallory Plotz. A year ago, I started the process of talking to my legislators about the broken childcare system. Although the field of early education is still far from receiving the pay they deserve, I was so grateful to see the continued support through the Great Start compensation payments for the childcare providers across our state. It was also a relief to hear that low-income families have access to more support through the much-needed changes that were made to childcare assistance and early learning scholarships programs. However, as a middle-class couple with two young children in need of childcare, my husband and I have had many struggles with finding and affording quality childcare in the past almost 5 years. With a combined salary of $110,000, which is not far over the median household income in Minnesota, we have faced many childcare challenges. As a full-time working parent of two young children, my husband and I could only afford to have one of our girls in a childcare center for preschool and only 3 days per week at $57 per day. Our youngest was home with my mom each day, who chose to retire early to support us, because even if we could afford to put both of our children into childcare, there were no spots available for infants and toddlers anywhere near us at the time. When my mom suffered a terrible break to her foot and was in need of several weeks off for surgery and recovery, we quickly realized that we couldn't rely on only her for our child care needs and should consider putting our toddler into a brand new family child care that we stumbled across with an opening. We considered this option because it would be much more affordable for our income to have her in family child care versus the child care center that our older daughter goes to. Even though this meant two drop-off and pick-up locations for our two children. In order to afford this, my husband and I literally took out our emergency fund that we had set aside, and we planned to pull from that money each month to afford the additional childcare expense that we were taking on. To our horror, the Friday before touring the new family childcare provider's home, our 18-month-old toddler died in her sleep. Sorry, this is just
no, we're
2 months ago.
Yeah.
With her autopsy very recently finalized last week, we are now learning her cause of death is undetermined and classified as SUDC, sudden unexpected death of a child. I am still very much in shock that my story took this horrendous turn, as I am sure you are as well. But before I told you about our tragedy, I hope you were also shocked by the fact that two full-time working parents making $110,000 per year could not comfortably afford to have two children in childcare in our small southern Minnesota town. And we needed to pull from our family's emergency fund to even afford the 3 days of care per week for the two of them. It is clear that Minnesota families still need your help affording quality childcare. Please pay attention to these challenges and offer more widespread support. Unfortunately, my husband and I will no longer benefit from any changes made to support the middle class for child care because our toddler died before the state figured this out, and our preschooler is heading to kindergarten in the fall. Although I have many new priorities on my list to advocate for now, I am still passionate about Minnesota fixing this broken system of child care. It is my hope that if nothing else, my testimony helps to drive home the point of all there is that we are missing with every day that goes by that we're not helping more families and children. Please take action to help other middle-class families that are facing the challenges that my husband and I did when trying to find and afford quality child care. Thank you.
Ms. Plotz, thank you for being with us. We're so sorry for your family's loss, and we're grateful that you're here, despite that, sharing your experience to help other families. That's really powerful and generous of you. And just know that we're thinking about you and your family. Thank you. Thank you so much. Members, we have heard perspectives from a number of places around the state, a number of different people in different situations, talking both about the positives about the investments we made and also gaps still present. I'm going to turn in a second to get a perspective from First Children's Finance, which works on the economics of child care, because I do think there's sort of a central question that may come up that I'm going to say in just a second. I want to make sure if there are questions for testifiers before, I don't know if some of them may have needed to hop off, but just to see if there are any at all. And I'm not seeing anything from any members, so we're going to move on then. But again, so grateful to the folks who came and spoke with us from so many different perspectives and shared them with us. We're really grateful to you. I'd like then to call up, we're going to move to the next portion of our agenda and call up Suzanne Pearl for Children's Finance. Thank you for being with us. And members, a central question that I was asking Ms. Pearl to answer for us is probably something that I don't think has been said explicitly, but maybe in the backs of many of our minds, which is, well, wait a second, how can it be that this service is so expensive for families and yet it pays so little to people who do the work? Like, what is up with that? The logic just, we're confused by that. And so to have somebody with expertise to discuss that and explore that for us seems really, really useful. I feel like we did this a little bit last session, but to expand this, especially as we're moving into talking about affordability for childcare. So, Ms. Pearl, if you can please identify yourself when you're ready, and then please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Suzanne Pearl. I'm the Minnesota Director for First Children's Finance.
And sorry, I'm going to ask you, make sure the microphone is right close to your mouth so that those of us in the room and people online, it can be a little awkward, but you want to just have that microphone right in front of your mouth. Terribly sorry.
Is this better?
It is better, yeah. Yeah, but even making sure you stay right close to it.
Okay. Good morning, committee. I'd like to just acknowledge the emotion in the room right now.
Yep.
That's all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
My name is Suzanne Pearl. I'm the Minnesota Director for a nonprofit and community development financial institution called First Children's Finance. For those of you who may not be familiar with our organization, we were founded in Minneapolis 30 years ago. We have now spread to other states, but we are headquartered in Minnesota. Our Minnesota program is the largest in our organization. We focus on the business side of childcare. Our mission is to build the supply and financial sustainability of excellent childcare. So while there are many in this room who will talk about quality and child development, I'm here to focus on the financial side. I've been asked to share some information with you. I'm going to start with some just a quick slide on affordability. One of our other testifiers had possibly more updated numbers. You can see on this first slide.
And let me just pause you for 1 second just to make sure folks online are able to see the slides that are up. I think Mr. Rohrer may be sharing the screen if he's not already, but just want to make absolutely sure. Make sure of that. I'm going to give this a try. Okay, I'm hoping. Representative Hudson, I'm going to ask you again. Can you give a thumbs up if you... Oh, no, I can't see you, though. somebody gave a thumbs up. Okay, good. We'll count that. Okay. So Ms. Pearl, okay, so now we know folks can see it, so please continue.
Okay. The data on the slide is from the Economic Policy Institute Child Care Scoreboard. Scorecard. They do one for every state. I think these numbers are from 2020. But at that time, the average annual cost of infant child care in the state of Minnesota was more than $16,000 annually. That comes out to more than 21% of median family income in Minnesota and 30% of average rent in Minnesota. Average cost of preschool care was more than $12,000, similarly expensive, which means that a median income family with an infant and a four-year-old would pay 37% of their income on child care. And you heard one of the testifiers speak to this. Child care comes at a time when most families are at the beginning of their, let's say, earning potential. They're young, and this is one of the largest expenditures they will ever have at the time when they are least able to afford it. Thank you. I and others have said on several occasions to this committee and in other areas that childcare is a broken business model. There's a disconnect there. Families can't afford childcare. We hear that time and again. Childcare businesses, however, have narrow profit margins. And this is a generalization. I'm not going to lie. There are a few who are doing well. But by and large, childcare businesses operate on paper-thin margins. At the same time, childcare workers are among the lowest paid in Minnesota's workforce. Why? But what it results in is that the actual cost of providing childcare is more than families alone can afford. In the coming slides, I'm going to talk about the cost to provide care, both in a licensed family childcare setting and a childcare center. The data comes from a newly released report. Hopefully it went public today. It was supposed to go public today. It is now, whether or not DHS is aware of that or not. Every 3 years, DHS commissions a cost, what they call the cost of care study. In your packets is the 2023 cost modeling report. First Children's Finance, my organization, created the report this year for the first time. I will say it was a team other than my own. So I'm coming into this a little bit new as you are as well. But I will say that in putting together the study, my colleagues surveyed nearly 1,100 child care providers. About 850 were family child care providers, 240 child care centers. They also completed business interviews with more than 30 child care providers, and this meant going right into their financial analysis. This is what my organization does every day. We do hundreds of financial analysis every year for licensed child care programs in Minnesota. And just to set the background a little bit, as of last week, there were about 6,000 licensed family child care programs across Minnesota, just over 1,700 child care centers. That's from publicly available DHS data.
And Ms. Pearl, I'll just highlight for folks, the Minnesota Child Care Cost Modeling Report is in members' packets, and I think available in the room as well, and then posted online. As you say, this is something that really just came out quite recently, so this is nicely timed as well. And so it's a pretty lengthy report. Members have that, and so just kind of to orient all of us. So please continue.
I will say it's an overwhelming amount of information, so take your time to go through it. One of the differences that First Children's Finance did with this report, in an effort to capture more of the variation geographically, particularly in greater Minnesota, the report studies data on different geographic levels using USDA's rural urban commuting areas. So it'll be urban, large town, small town, rural. As you go through the report. So let's start with family child care. And this data is pulled directly from the cost modeling report. What does the budget look like? What is the expense breakdown? You can see here personnel expenses, and in this case, that's basically health insurance counting as personnel. And again, this is an average. Not everybody has it. Some do. This is the average cost. Occupancy costs, this uses the time space percentage that most family child care uses. That'll be homeowners, renters, insurance, utilities. You'll see program expenses are there, and then administration expenses, which could be anything like telephone and internet, insurance, office supplies. On the next slide, We're going to show the difference between expenses and revenue. You'll note that labor was not, or, you know, a wage was not in the previous pie chart. That's because most family child care providers don't cut themselves a check every 2 weeks or 15 days. Basically, how we know how much they're taking in is based on their net revenue against expenses. We'll take a closer look at that in the next slide, but I just want to note that expenses are fairly consistent across different size communities across Minnesota. I thought that was a very interesting finding. So while there may be a variation in net revenue, ultimately you've got the same amount of expenses statewide. So this captures net revenue broken out into an hourly wage. And it's interesting to talk about an hourly wage for licensed family child care. In our survey, the average hours per week were about 65 hours a week. This is not a 40-hour work week. And when you think about it, you heard some of the parents, you know, they've got, let's say, 8.5, 9-hour workday. You've got commuting time to get to drop your kids off. And you've got parents working at all different times. You've got arranging different pickups. This is a long, long day. And then add to that, you need to get your supplies, you need to buy the food, you need to take your training, hopefully from First Children's Finance. We are free and develop approved on the business side of childcare. But there are a lot of external administrative tasks that you need to do to run a business. So that's how that works out. And you can see that the average rural wage in this report is $8.65 an hour. Small town, large town, about $10, and urban areas, about $17. I'm going to move on to child care centers. And this pie chart is based on an average 80-seat center. That was the average size that came out of our survey, so that's what we modeled, using statewide average expenses, including average wages. And you'll see here, wages, benefits, personnel, that is by far the largest expense. And we've been saying this for years, about 70% of a child care center expenses, that it's labor, it's the people. It's the people who are caring for your children. And that's the bulk of the cost. Occupancy here is going to include rent, building insurance, utilities, maintenance, repair and cleaning, other costs. The other cost category, I think that's 17%. The largest category in other is food, and that's about half of that other category. Classroom equipment, program supplies, payroll processing, bank fees, liability insurance, other auditing and legal fees, license permitting costs. So that is the breakdown of expenses for a child care centers. What you're all thinking, I'm just going to say this, the state mandates how many educators are in a classroom. And this is the cost to cover that. They do that for family child care, too. You have licensed family child care license, normally around 12 people, and there are some requirements for how many infants and toddlers you can have within that 12-seat. Similar for a child care center, one adult per 4 infants, 7 toddlers, I believe, and then it's 10 preschool age. The next slide shows wages by geography. Lead teacher is the middle here, rural, $17. It actually goes down a little bit for small town and large town, and higher a little bit on urban. And I'm going to note not all centers have all of these positions, and the model, and they certainly don't have all these positions as a full-time. There are very few full-time accountants in a child care center. So the model pulled averages. And the last slide. This is what it all adds up to. Here we have annual per child cost per each age group, infant, toddler, and preschool. We actually don't have a similar table for family child care. It was a result of the methodology. We're hoping to get something like this sooner. So in the first slide, and what we've heard about, where parents were paying an average of $16,000 a year, $17,000 a year for infant care. But if you look at this table, that really doesn't cover the actual cost. the cost is still there for infant care. In rural areas, the cost for, to a business to provide infant care is $20,000 a year. We often, in our work with child care providers, businesses are basically trying to make this work for everyone. They're trying to, you know, families can only pay so much, and they have ratios as far as child safety and quality care that they need to meet. So the phrase that we often use is that when putting together your budget, you're going to lose money on infant care, you're going to break even on toddlers, but and you need those preschool and school-age kids to subsidize the cost of care for the infants. So those are the calculations that business owners are making all the time. One of our services is enrollment management, how number of classrooms and ages of kids. And it's a constantly evolving equation. Unlike public schools where everybody moves to a new grade on August 28th or whatever the first day of school is, kids in child care have birthdays every day of the year. So child care providers need to be mindful of that. And you've got kids who are going to, you know, move into this room, but then you're holding that space and another kid from your infant room is going to move to the toddler space. It's a lot of work. But that is just a basic overview of what the cost is to provide child care. You don't need to show that. The last slide is just contact information if anybody has questions or would like to reach out directly, and I will leave it there for questions.
Let's just go back one slide if you can. I'm just going to ask one thing and then certainly open up. And folks, as members, this will be time for discussion and questions. My understanding, Ms. Pearl, is that because of what you described of sort of preschool families in a way subsidizing infant families, and of course they all were different stages of the same families, because preschoolers were once infants, my understanding is that if anything, the infant rate is artificially a little bit low because it's being subsidized, and then potentially that means other rates are higher, because just trying to make it be that families can receive the care that they need just because of the cost. Am I right in kind of understanding that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So members, questions, discussion. Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you for your testimony. You mentioned that you weren't going to lie, that there were some that were doing well. Is that in a certain part of the state? Is it for places that are single entity, multiple entities? Mm-hmm. Could you define what that means?
Ms. Pearl.
Thank you for the question, and I can't actually define it. The clients that we work with are not those, but I am aware of some programs who serve a clientele that can't afford that expense. Honestly, I can't say I know more than a handful of them. I don't think that's anywhere near a significant amount of child care businesses.
Representative Lesnikar, follow up.
Thank you. And when you look at, that was my sense too, is because I don't hear that from people across the state that anyone is really doing well. So I wondered if it was a widespread thing you see or isolated, and it sounds like it's isolated. I think the data here and what you just said, too, of the pre-K, one of the things, we passed an initiative where the expansion at the school-based programs for pre-K, do you see that creating a void for the staffing ratios and the revenue stability for existing centers, freestanding centers, if they have one center or five? Anybody who's not affiliated with the school model for pre-K, are they going to be financially viable at a family center level and a child care center level for greater Minnesota or urban or any of these categories? Do you know the impact? Have you analyzed that?
And can I just clarify your question, Representative Zazkar? Do you mean without state support for infant and toddler care? You're just talking about if all there is school-based pre-K? Or are you talking about if there's also state support for infant and toddler care?
What I'm asking is the impact of the legislation we passed for the pre-K if the four-year-olds move from family-centered childcare, three- or four-year-olds move to the child-centered childcare for the programs we initiated, what is the impact on the stabilization financially for the family childcare center or the childcare center that's not affiliated with the school program? Because what I heard her say is that they don't make any money on infants, they make a titch more for toddlers, and they start to make money at 3-4. If those 3 or 4 year olds are moving out of the model, my concern is, what is the financial stability? And you sound like you're an expert. So you know, you can help me understand. Because I'm analyzing this going, what is that impact in greater Minnesota for rural, small town, large, and urban? And is that an unintended consequence?
Ms. Pearl.
First of all, thank you for saying I sound like an expert. That was really nice. The way I'm going to answer that is, it is a real concern among the child care providers that we work with. We do an annual provider survey in partnership with the Minneapolis Federal Reserve every year, and we get about 1,300 family child care, family and center providers who respond to that survey, and the growth of the voluntary preschool program is a concern. It is definitely a concern within the provider community. I know that there is a stated goal of mixed delivery, and I think that's important, that families have choice for the different types of child care, and that includes center-based and family licensed family child care. We sometimes, to illustrate your point, we sometimes have people who are interested in starting a business. I know there's a gap in infant and toddler care, so I'm going to start a program with infant and toddler care. And then we run the numbers for them, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Zlesnikar. Yeah. Further.
Thank you. Because I, for the last 2 months, have been doing focus groups with child care centers and family child care, and their concern is elevated right now. The stabilization grants and the initiatives that have done, and on many levels. One is the employees that they're employing may be on medical assistance, and the employers are asking to not take the wage increase because they're going to lose their heating subsidy, their rent subsidy, their SNAP benefits, and their CCAP. So they're asking to not increase their wages, so they have that issue. And they also now have lost people coming to work in the summers so they could take a vacation because we passed the unemployment for the paras at the school, so many of them were coming to help in child care centers. So they don't have any backup, and they are losing people to teachers at the pre-K who aren't going to work in the freestanding settings because they want the benefits of the school system. And so I wondered if you're seeing that in your surveys because in rural Minnesota, we don't have a lot of centers as it stands, and we've lost 1,000 family child care providers in, I believe, a year for the state of Minnesota. So if that trajectory continues and we lose the places that provide infant care and toddler care, my concern is we're going to lose more people from the workforce. And so I wondered if you guys have done analysis on that further or if this is just all new.
Ms. Pearl.
It's a good question. I will say we have some of the increase in CCAP rates, the Great Start compensation payments are still being rolled out. We haven't done an analysis on those types of questions yet, as the policies haven't been fully implemented yet. Our business is to help childcare businesses stay in business in the places where families need them to be. So as issues come up, you know, we will be happy to bring them forward.
Okay. So moving on. Representative Zlesnikar, moving on. Or do you
thank you.
One final thing? No? Okay, hold on. Okay, Representative Coulter, you're up next.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will start off by apologizing for my voice because, like so many other parents of young kids, I am recovering from a cold that my daughter brought home from preschool.
I'm sure Representative Hemmings and Yeager and Lee are Yeah. Glad to hear that. But anyway, you're fine. You're just fine. Yes, okay. Continue on, Representative Colt.
I'm past the point of contagion, I promise.
Okay.
Just one question when, and I'm sure this is detailed in the report, but specifically referring to occupancy cost, I'm wondering if you could detail how much of that is sort of related to, I guess the term that I sort of come to is like capital costs, specific investments in facilities and things like that.
Mm-hmm. It's oftentimes rents, it's maintenance. We saw during the pandemic, there was a lot of deferred maintenance where people weren't taking that. I should mention my organization is currently administering the Facility Revitalization Grants program that came out of the 2021 legislature, and the need has been immense for, you know, just to fix what was been broken. This is one of the areas that is a barrier, not only for centers, but also for family child care, in that facilities, they're hard to come by and they're expensive. Particularly in Greater Minnesota, one of our programs is called the Rural Child Care Innovation Program. It's a community-led, facilitated process for communities to come together and find ways to support the supply of child care in their communities. And one of the things that often comes of that is a way to have community-sponsored, community-subsidized facilities. That's one thing that has worked around the state. In the metro, that program doesn't work in the metro. We're trying to move it in because facilities, we see a lot of people who are interested in starting childcare. They just can't find a commercial property that they can afford. And beyond that, they can't find financing when they do find a commercial property, because you know you're going to go to a bank, or I mean, this is why we exist as a CDFI. You go to a bank with a business plan for a childcare, you're not going to show a profit, mm-hmm. you know, till year two, year three, and so it's a lot to ask a financer to take a flyer on providing a loan.
Representative Coulter, follow up.
No, I don't have any follow up questions, but I wanted to raise that issue because I think this is. Something that I've been thinking a lot about in terms of, you know, the costs of doing business and the costs of making this something that's sustainable, because there are these startup costs, but there are always these sort of ongoing costs as well. And I was at an event, I think it was the one in Mountain Iron, where, a provider mentioned that her refrigerator ended up going on the fritz, and it was discovered at an inspection that it was like 5 or 6 degrees warmer than the regulation said it had to be for formula storage and all that. And so she had to pay several hundred dollars just to fix her home refrigerator to be compliant. And so I think I just kind of wanted to raise that issue as one of those sort of hidden costs that I think as we look into this issue is something we're going to address. And then the last thing I just wanted to mention, because I was curious about it, on the slide that relates to wages, minimum wage in the state of Minnesota for small employers in this year is $8.63 an hour. And for large employers, it's $10.59 an hour. So I wanted to raise that because I think as we look at these wage numbers, we see in all reality that folks who are working in child care settings in most of the state are basically making minimum wage. And I just think that's a reality that needs to be stated plainly. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. Representative Katiza Witun is up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't go on too long because I know I get a little bit more time to speak about me and Senator Housechild's idea and moving into a proposal for next session. But I have done a lot of calculations over the past few weeks just in terms of that 7% of annualized income that is supposed to be going toward childcare, and no more than that, right? I mean, that's what the Federal Department of Health and Human Services has set as the ideal rate. And so I was looking at this, the chart that you provided, Ms. Pearl, the childcare center's annual per child cost. I know that algebra was a long time ago for most of us. And so if you take any of those numbers that are listed in that chart there, and you divide them by 0.07, then you get a very big number that most Minnesotans do not make in order to pay only 7% of their annualized income. In fact, a business journal came out with some statistics on the variety of income earners and percentages of Minnesotans just a I think it was last month, maybe it was September. But the top 5% of income earners in Minnesota, like what you have to hit to get into that top 5% is $228,000. So if you look at that and then you look at the rates that centers or childcare providers should be charging for infants in order to cover all of their costs, not even Minnesotans in the top 5%, you'd have to go all the way up to $297,000 for a family to not spend more than 7% of their income in a rural area. It's $340,000 annually in the urban areas. And those numbers, Minnesotans don't make that much money. So we really have to get creative here. And I think, you know, when we just dig in and look at the data that's been provided, and thank you so much for the work that you do to support childcare providers across the state, Ms. Pearl, we need to have public investment. And I'm really excited to talk more about what that might look like.
Thank you, Representative Cortez Ritune. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just wanted to... I appreciate that Rep. Katiza Watun talked about the demand side. I want to go back to the supply side. And I heard Ms. Pearl mention something about her organization being a CDFI. So I was just hoping she could explain that. And then also talk about the unique, I guess, challenges or like the different situation of, you know, what a child care center is or a family-based child care center is compared to a normal small business that might be looking for financing. Just so folks understand like the... like the, I guess, obstacles and hurdles that you would need to overcome to even, like, open a child care center.
Okay. Ms. Pearl. Thank you, Representative Lee. Ms. Pearl.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. On the CDFI, we're a community development financial institution, which means that our mandate, as far as being CDFI registered, is to provide financing. We are the only CDFI in the country whose entire portfolio is child care businesses. So we lend to low to moderate income borrowers, who in this case are childcare businesses. There are regulations about the income levels of our target market. So as we provide loans, we did a lot of forgivable loans during the pandemic era. Can I answer more questions for you? I will just say that the reason that we exist as a CDFI is it's really hard for a childcare business to walk into, for example, a bank, one of the large national banks with a business plan that says, I'm looking for a loan. And if so, then they come to us because we know the business. We look at that business plan and we can say, okay, we understand that you're not going to show a profit right in the first year. So let's work with you because we're looking at your financials and they look familiar to us. And so that's the basis for our lending.
Representative Lee, maybe follow up, I think.
That's great. I'm also curious if people are listening and they're thinking about getting into this really difficult business. What are the resources that you might have to offer? Or where can they go?
Ms. Pearl, community service here.
So,
Ms. Pearl.
Let me put my marketing hat on. So we focus on the business side of child care. Our lending, our loan fund provides any number of small business loan products. We are an SBA lender as well. We are a USDA lender in Greater Minnesota. On the business development side, we do any number of free develop-approved online trainings. When I say develop-approved, that's the state of Minnesota's professional development system. Child care providers are required to take a certain number of professional development hours. Ours are develop-approved, and they're free. We've got a startup boot camp. We do marketing. We do business planning. Licensed family child care, one of our most popular trainings is called Separating Your Personal and Business Finance, because obviously a lot of people just, run their business from their house. you know, they're shopping at the same time. In rural Minnesota, we have the Rural Child Care Innovation Program, which is, as I mentioned, a community facilitated solution to the child care gap. We also have a cohort that is specifically for child care providers of color that helps to support child care business owners through guest experts who are also either banking and taxes and legal, also from their community to help promote child care businesses that are owned by people of color.
And I might, we should probably wrap up relatively soon. So Representative Lee, anything further from you? Okay, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager. And I think we'll probably need to have that be Representative Keeler and then Vice Chair Keeler. So we have Representative Hemmingson-Yeager first. You? Thanks.
I'll be really quick. Hopefully these are quick questions. I just want to clarify something that I might have misheard earlier. Could you just quick define the difference between family child care and child care centers?
Sure.
Ms. Pearl.
Thank you. I am always going to get wrong Rule 2 versus Rule 3. Licensed family child care is mostly a child care program located within a home. It doesn't have to be. There is a special family child care license that it can be located outside the home with a limit of usually 12 children, can be up to 14 children. That's licensed family child care centers. Are not home-based and have different staffing ratios. That's usually, you know, you're hiring staff. You've got a director and a lead teacher and teacher's aide, usually larger. Is there anything?
So I think that's, I mean, the basic distinction, Representative Hammond, makes sense?
Yeah, no, that's helpful. So when I was going through all of the things with my kids, I always thought family child care was like home-based only, and the fact that, and then when I think Representative Coulter asked about occupancy, he mentioned commercial property. So I just got a little confused that, and I appreciate the clarification, That's helpful.
Yeah, it is possible.
Quick clarification? Okay, yeah. Okay,
and
good.
Then,
Representative Hammond, you're.
Oops, sorry. I appreciate the comparison with the pie charts, and again, kind of like as I'm thinking through this, like, how do we help all people in, like, the best way possible? When I look at the family child care pie chart compared to the centers, it looks to me like it's kind of an issue of scaling. So as you scale up, some costs can go down, but then you're also going to have costs go up other places, and I think that's kind of reflective in the pie chart. I was curious, though, if you happen to have, because I love comparisons, slide 5 where you have the family child care bar graph of expenses and revenue, do you have similar data for centers?
Ms. Pearl.
I'm going to say I don't know that possibly. This report was just released, and I haven't made my whole way through it. So.
Maybe what we can do is do some follow-up if necessary, if that's okay. Okay, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, yes. You got something else? Yep, that's okay.
And then
yep.
On the flip side, I really appreciate the data that you had on the cost per child for the centers. Do you have similar data on the family child care?
Yeah. That one we actually don't. I think I mentioned earlier that the way that the data was collected and sorted in the data management software for family child care, it basically went cost by classroom. And so you've got infant classroom, toddler classroom, preschool. Family child care is only one classroom with different ages of children. So that's going to be we're talking to DHS about a potential further breakdown to get at that. At that level, but we don't have that in this report.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thanks, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager. Vice Chair Keeler.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. I guess I need some clarification. Being from Greater Minnesota, I need some population numbers. Like, what is a rural? What is small town, large town? No, I looked through the 69-page thing, and I didn't see it. Can you tell me what the population breakdowns are? And then my second question with that, and again, I'm kind of disappointed in DHS that we didn't even acknowledge any of our tribal nations. The way that we do childcare with our tribal nations is extremely different. And so I know that we break it down then by town and then by region. The problem with doing that is it divides our tribal nations sometimes. So I think, again, I've been saying this in a lot of spaces, you know, making us invisible is the number one sign of racism. And I am tired of coming to these meetings and saying that we care about all of Minnesota and not understanding that we have 11 sovereign nations here and then lumping us together in Greater Minnesota and not even, like, you pulled your data from DHS And so, like, if we're going to do other conversations, we have to grasp our entire state as the state that it is. We don't dissect Minnesota just as these areas and these towns. So those are two questions, and I won't have any follow-up at the time, but I do just want to be really clear, I guess, as we have these conversations. I mean, I know that Greater Minnesota often, for many people, just gets clumped into a thing, but we're very unique and we're very beautiful and we're divided in a lot of wonderful ways that I wish we would acknowledge in reports. Because to have 69 pages of a report that doesn't identify what's happening in our most poverty communities is an issue for me, and it really should be an issue for this community.
Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler. Ms. Pearl, responses to those two questions?
I really appreciate that comment. And on the first one, I can get back to you with the definitions of the four geographic areas.
Please do that.
Do we have, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Representative Keeler, please.
Can we have somebody from DHS come up and give us that information? Because I think it's important that we know, because we all live in, like, the difference between a 4,000 community and a 25,000 community makes a difference in what all these numbers mean. So I'm going to need somebody has to know what these breakdowns are, and the fact that it wasn't identified in the report, I'm sorry, I'm just not going to wait for somebody to send it to me.
Well, we can see if we have somebody who can answer today. I don't know that we do, but we might. Is there anybody here who can answer? Mr. Dem, come on up. Well, as you sit down, I'll ask you to introduce you to identify yourself. Yeah, but you can maybe Mr. Rohrer, if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Rohrer, Mr. Dem, why don't you sit there? Ms. Pearl, why don't you stay up there? And Mr. Rohrer, you may be able to grab a chair or something, or just wait for a second. Mr. Dem, if you could, I don't know if you have a copy of the report, but if you can please answer the first question, if you're able to, regarding those definitions at all. Mr. Dem.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Nick Dem with DHS. Representative Keeler, unfortunately, I don't have those definitions on me. I'll have to follow up with the staff that were part of this report. We can do that after today's committee hearing.
We certainly will want that, but Vice Chair Keeler, we certainly want you to get that to us. Is there anything more that you want to add at this point? And then the second point as well about any kind of breakdown in terms of our tribal communities and tribal nations as well would certainly be something that we'd be interested in getting any information on. Do you have anything on that at this moment, Mr. Dem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Keeler, I don't have that on me today, but it's appreciate the feedback, and I'll be sharing that with staff, and we can follow up after today.
Please certainly do that. Okay. Let me see if there's anything else.
That's
okay.
I'll look forward to that information. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler. Thanks so much for bringing that up. And thank you, Ms. Pearl, for your work. But Representative Daniels, anything? I know you often want to be called on last. I just want to make sure in case you had anything.
I appreciate that, Chair Pinto. It's nothing we haven't, a lot of this is nothing new that we haven't heard before. I'm going to be kind of blunt, and you may not like it, but I'm speaking as a grandparent of seven children, and my youngest one is now in second grade. So, and we would, when my wife and I got married, and I think I told the story before, we had three young children, and my wife was working at the Bemidji Kindergarten Center, and we figured out what the daycare costs were for three of our young children compared to what she was making as a paraprofessional. And we just decided that that wasn't the right path for us. So she quit her job and started watching our kids. And lo and behold, within a month or two, we had probably six or seven other children heard about, you know, my wife staying home. And I hate to admit this, but she did better in those years financially than ever working as a para. And that was just part of the decisions we made, you know. We had a motorcycle snowmobile retail shop, and I kind of ran that, and she did the daycare. And so I don't know, you know, and I'm thinking about all the like I say, you may not like this, but all the taxes that were raised this year. I know there were someone coming down on child care and lower income, but, you know, we took a pretty big bite this year. The $9 billion in new taxes, and that's not going to help anybody directly, this, you know, thing with stuff here. So I just don't want to see us trying to have government takeover of our daycare centers, family daycare centers. And we've talked about that several times, I believe. And That's just my opinion, and I don't mean to be rude or upsetting, but that's just the experience I've lived through, and I just want to make sure everybody's aware of where I stand.
Thank you, Lee Daniels, for those comments. And Ms. Pearl, thank you so much for your work and for the information you've provided, and we'll consider you a resource going forward. Thank you so much. And so with that, we're going to move on then to a proposal to address the needs that we've been hearing about. So we call Representative Katiza Ratoon to the front. And Representative Housechild is joining us via Zoom, I hope and think. And maybe we can bring him up as well in some form. We'll figure that out. Representative Katiza Ratoon, I know that there's a graphic in the packet as well that says families need high-quality, affordable child care now. I'll direct members' attention to that. And Senator Housechild, nice to have you with us as well. I know it's a little bit unusual, but we don't have a – it's not a bill. It's an idea and that you and Representative Katiza Ratoon have been working on, and so glad that both of you here. So we'll start with Representative Katiza Ratoon, and if you can please talk with us about your proposal and your idea.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think I'm actually it's really good timing based on Representative Daniels' comments about programs that will benefit Minnesotans directly. And, you know, we can all contribute so that families can benefit directly from a program like this one, potentially. So what we're discussing today is actively in the works in the lead up to this this next session. But being here today and being able to share the work that we are doing during the interim to reduce costs for Minnesota families is a privilege. You know, we are a part-time citizen legislature, but our work does not stop when we leave the Capitol. And we are talking to families in our district, and we are working with advocates. And as a mom of four kids, nine and under, when it comes to the cost of childcare and early childhood education, I know that the struggle is real. Parents know that our responsibility to our kids doesn't stop when we punch the clock and go to work every day. And that's one of many reasons that parents of young children and being here and sitting at the Capitol and sitting on this committee, representation is so necessary here at the Capitol. So over the last 4 years, my time in office thus far, I've worked closely with Chair Pinto and other legislators, advocates, parents, childcare providers, and early childhood educators to bring forward numerous proposals for consideration. And I think, you know, Chair Pinto did a really wonderful job highlighting the great work that we did earlier this year. It was truly historic in terms of investments in children and families, in housing, in healthcare, in education, and in early care and learning. I'm really proud of the passage of two proposals in particular, the child tax credit and paid family and medical leave. Both of these, individually and collectively, have made Minnesota one of 14 states offering each of these benefits. So it's kind of cool. Our commitment to the children and families of Minnesota extends far beyond the bounds of this committee, but together we certainly drive much of that work. And on this proposal, I'm glad to have Senator Housechild on with us today, but we're working hand in hand to create a bicameral proposal that will benefit more families across the state. As testifiers and advocates have mentioned earlier, we're seeing this tremendous gap in support for almost 75% of Minnesota families, those who earn more than $60,000 a year. And we know that families continue to struggle with the cost of early care and learning. The Great Start Affordability Program, and the name is in the works, but this is how I want to introduce it today to you, continues our work, mine and Senator Housechild's, on the expanded Great Start Child Care Tax Credit that did not make it to the finish line last year. So this is an alternative way, in lieu of a tax credit, to get much-needed dollars back in the hands of Minnesota families and address the cost of child care. So Great Start affordability subsidies will be designed on a sliding scale in terms of annualized income and number and age of children. We talked a lot about the 7% number. I mentioned that earlier in my testimony. So, but basically, it's just to say that no family should have to spend more than 7% of their annualized income on child care and early learning. A well-recognized financial recommendation is that individuals shouldn't spend more than 30% of their income on housing, whether that's a rent payment or a mortgage payment, et cetera. And in reality, both in my lived experience and some of the testifiers earlier, across Minnesota, it's showing that some families spend almost twice their mortgage payment or even that amount on child care alone.
So the Great Start Affordability Program will help families like Daniel, who's a single father of two working boys. He couldn't be with us today, but his testimony is in our packets. They earn beyond the level of subsidies provided in Minnesota currently and continue to support these same lower-income families. Daniel was denied an existing early childhood scholarship because he earned $63,000 a year. He wishes he could be here with us today, like I said. But much of the design, much like the design of our Great Start Child Care Tax Credit, the Great Start Affordability Program aims to fill this gap for families who still can't make ends meet. And it will provide a subsidy directly to child care providers on behalf of Minnesota families based on the enrollment and participation of one or more of their children. The subsidies will be scaled by income, and we will be working closely with advocates as well as the Children's Cabinet and the future Department of Children, Youth, and Families in order to determine the system and the frequency of these payments. The hope is that the Great Start Affordability Program can utilize the existing system of early childhood scholarships, which continue to receive incredible bipartisan support, particularly from members of this committee, so I appreciate that. And using an existing system would also allow us to get these payments out much quicker, ensuring that families see lower childcare costs as soon as possible. I just appreciate all the sentiments from parents here who took the time to talk with us, the providers who shared the day-to-day experience of being a business owner, and most of them are parents themselves. And Ms. Pearl's presentation was so helpful in grounding this conversation. Your thoughts are welcome as we continue discussions on this proposal, and I'd be happy to discuss just how much the Great Start Affordability Program would benefit families in your community. The work that we've done and the work that we still have to do impacts the children and families across the state in each and every district every day, and I look forward to your support for the program.
Thank you so much, Representative Katiza Witun. Senator Housechild, we're pleased to have you with us and appreciate your partnership with our committee member and colleague and your commitment to this issue, and invite you to say a few words now if you'd like.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Vice Chair Keeler, for holding this important hearing. As it was said, my name is Grant Housechild, and I'm the state senator from the most rural Senate district in Minnesota. I have the privilege of representing the East Iron Range, two tribal nations, the North Shore, Superior National Forest, the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, five big counties, and many rural communities across the Northland. But more importantly than my public service is my personal commitment as a father. I have a three-year-old and a one-year-old. My wife is a nurse, which is a very busy professional commitment. From being on call and working long hours, her job is not one with flexibility. And given my own service, our reliance on childcare is critical. But it's not just my personal experience. I've attended three childcare roundtables across my district over the last year, including at Ms. Chantel Gruba's Iron Range Tykes Learning Center. So thank you to Chantel for having us. And whether I'm on the Iron Range, the North Shore, or in the suburbs just outside of Duluth, I continue to hear about the struggles families are facing with childcare. It's by far in the top three issues that I hear about on a day-to-day basis. In addition, we have prospective employers that I'm aware of who are trying to open pretty large businesses from industry and manufacturing to mining adjacent industries that are facing big challenges in opening because of housing and childcare. Childcare, as we've heard in all the previous testimony, is clearly a market failure. We can't pay those helping raise our kids enough to afford their lives in our own communities, and that can't continue. On the flip side, our families are spending more on childcare than their mortgages. Again, that's unsustainable, and we have to address it. Families like mine, my wife and I, have considered having a third child, and I talk about it openly. We have decided not to do that at this time because of childcare costs, and I know that there are many families around Minnesota who are in the same boat. And with less and less people able to start families, we're seeing a drastic decrease in local growths of our population. This will just exacerbate workforce challenges, force families to start later, and provide less opportunities in our communities. So I'm really, really proud to work with Representative Carly Katizia Withun on the Great Start Affordability Program to help support families making 150% of the median state income better afford childcare. While the details have been expressed by the previous speaker, I do just want to make one critical point. While we did a lot for childcare this last session, especially as it relates to childcare center stability and support for families and children most in need, We also need to support middle-class families who are struggling to make ends meet. Thank you to those of you who testified from Northeastern Minnesota. We have seen in the previous testimony that our rural communities, I think, face nearly identical costs for childcare, but far less revenue. And making the economics work in our rural communities is just frankly harder. Just like it's harder to spread costs for school levies, hospital taxing districts, emergency medical services, and so much more. But this isn't just a rural issue. It's a statewide and national issue. If we want Minnesota to be the best place to raise a family and support businesses, workforce, and our economy, we must address the childcare affordability crisis. I hope you'll join us in working to support families in this next session with the Great Start Childcare Affordability Bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Senator Housechild. A pleasure to have you with us, and many thanks to you and Representative Katisa-Witun. So members, questions or comments about the proposal and the idea? Again, this is not yet in bill form, and I heard Representative Katisa-Witun, I think Senator Housechild as well, express a great interest to receiving input, not only from members of the committee and the legislature, but from members of the public to hear what folks think about this. But are there questions for them or comments that folks may have? Vice Chair Keeler, please.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Representative Carly Katisa-Witun, have you talked to the chamber regarding this? Where do they stand on this idea?
Representative Katisa-Witun.
Thank you, Representative Keeler, for the question. I haven't had a direct conversation with the Minnesota Chamber at this point in time, but we've been working closely with advocates who speak with the business community over the past couple months.
Been a big year. Vice Chair Keeler, yeah.
Sure. So one of the things that I've been working on for 3 years is kind of similar to Kentucky did a bill kind of braiding these different worlds together, because I think when we look at affordability, it is not just the parent and just the state's obligation to help our workforce, right? Like, we go to daycare so that our parents can go to work, yet the chamber is nowhere in here, and all of us go to work for most of the businesses in the state. And so I think we're missing this braided strand, right? Like, if we braid three areas together, including the chamber, including our businesses. I know Nicole Flick from ABC 123, you know, I live in Fargo-Moorhead. We are very divided on a lot of things when you go across the river. But figuring out how our big employers invest in childcare matters too. And so I think that we have to be really mindful that it can't always be the parents and the state that foot the bill. I mean, we have giant corporations that make a massive profit based on the workers, and then our families are really left picking up the bill. And so I would encourage you all, us all, to get the chamber here. Talk to them. I mean, I know my chamber, in every single conversation I'm in, they're like, oh, childcare. Yet they don't show up here in ways to support us. And I think that we really have to think differently about that. And I think we need the braided approach with our chamber and businesses in general. Thank you.
Thanks, Vice Chair Keeler. And I'll maybe note, I know the Minnesota Business Partnership and Chamber this has been a big something that they've both spoken a lot about and I've certainly been in contact with them through the years. I know, you know, to be candid, right, there is a balance in terms of willingness to spend for there to be a public investment sometimes. But in terms of sort of the need, I've definitely been hearing that. And so we'll have to continue those conversations, certainly. Other members, questions or comments? Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And thank you, Senator Housechild and Representative. Child care is a very important thing to me. Granted, my kids were in family child care and center child care quite a few years ago. They're 29 and 27. But this is the number one thing I hear about for all of northeastern Minnesota and for everybody I know that lives across the state. So I think it's important that we do it. I think one of the things that we're not talking about is when you look, I've spent a tremendous amount of time reading the statutes for childcare, what we require, the requirements for family childcare and the requirements have to be analyzed because mandates cost money. And we have, over the years, increased so many mandates to centers and also to family childcare, and you can see the cause and effect. At the same time, we're trying to grow it. And so we have to look at what these mandates say. I've been spending time in centers, and I, quite frankly, yesterday had another town hall in northern Minnesota, and I had seniors come who were completely appalled that they couldn't be, as a mother and a grandmother, they couldn't count in the staffing to work, to care for infants, to hold a baby 6 weeks to 16 months old, that they don't meet the criteria as an aide. They aren't
They have to have a 1-to-4 ratio, one teacher. So we have a workforce shortage and a child care shortage with standards that, quite frankly, are appalling to people who have been a mom. They don't qualify. You can't use the credit for experience for volunteering, being a certified nursing assistant, being a para, being a mother, me being a nursing home administrator. None of that's going to count if I want to go work in a child care center. So we have to really look at what we're mandating and what counts and who we're leaving out as being a great child care provider, because I've used both. And the other thing we're not talking about is 40% of our state has increased mental health needs. So adding all these requirements to have just not looking at social needs, not looking at emotional needs, just academic needs are one part of a child's development. And if 40% of our kids and adults have mental health issues, to expect that we're only going to be looking at it from an academic thing, I think is really short-sighted. They need nurturing. They need socialization. They need the basics. And some of them are fantastic in the homes. I would suspect that many in the tribes, in the tribal communities, use home-based model as greater Minnesota does. In most of the areas I'm in, there's one center. There's one center in Two Harbors. There's one center in many places. And I just got a text from one up there that said the only way they're staying open is by giving teachers free child care. They can't meet the mandates, and that's 15% of their revenue, and they're all about to go under. And we haven't implemented the FMLA. So we have to really look at what we are mandating for the centers, because the cause and effect is going to be devastating if we don't look at both. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lesnikar. Representative Perez-Vega, you're up next.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing what a game plan of initiatives we all have in this committee to work on. But I want to make sure that we, you know, get a vibe of including workforce policy with child care policy. Mm. Okay, this is about rural Minnesota. This is about urban cities. This is my district to the res. If we are providing project development that is coming from our workforce throughout this entire state, there has to be implementation that if you got a job, that job is also going to supply some of that bread, some of that funding for you to be able to keep that job and so that your kid has a great upbringing, so that there is cultural competencies in these child care centers, whether they are 50 kids to 100 or the 5 to 10 that are in those rural communities. So we really have to connect those dots. Where we're putting funding has to got to put more into the pocket of not the just only the workers or those grants for those that are going to be getting those licenses, but for our youngest Minnesotans, whether their parents make a certain amount of money or not. We are all struggling here. This is obviously the beam of attention that is a national crisis right now. So let's take a moment to take how we can get the pros of what we've been able to do so gratefully this past session, and really stop creating these pits in the shoes of these kids and these childcare workers and the future of what childcare looks like. We can have these answers here clear. We just got to connect the dots a little bit better and level that where funding is going. Funding is also going over here on this side. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Perez-Vega. Other questions or comments from members? Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to sort of start off here, Representative Zalesnikar, I've been working on some of these licensing and inspection issues, and I would say you're not entirely wrong. I think there are some serious issues with the way these statutes are written, the way they're enforced. I think to what I have seen, a great deal of that challenge, frankly, comes from the fact that we have 87 counties and we have 87 separate licensing enforcement agencies that different licensors can interpret things in different ways. And I think there absolutely is a better way to do that system. And so I'm happy to partner with you on that work. We can talk offline about that as well. I mentioned I was up at the event that Senator Hochschild mentioned at Iron Range Heights in Mountain Iron. And I was also able to get out to an event in New Ulm. And, you know, what I have heard, and I've heard, you know, from providers and so on in my own community as well, and being a parent of young kids, I have lots of friends who are parents of young kids, and so I see and live this reality every single day. In fact, I at one point nearly thought I was going to have to miss a good portion of one of my own committees to make sure that I could have childcare for my own kid at home. So, you know, I think there are a lot of pieces to this puzzle, but I think at the end of the day, you know, we just need to recognize that we do need to make a stronger community investment, whatever that community means, in what really is an issue of community success and stability. And, you know, I think we ask so much of providers, we ask so much of parents, but everybody benefits. Everybody matters in this equation. And everybody interacts with the early care and education system in some way in this state. And so, you know, I am grateful to see this coming forward. I think this is something even my local chamber has talked to me about. And even rooms where there are not a lot of parents of young kids, folks are noticing what this means for communities. And I think, you know, we all value families. We all value strong and stable and successful communities. And the reality is that this lack of investment is holding a lot of folks back in really big ways. And I think we owe it to our neighbors and our families and our communities to take action. So I'm excited to see where this goes and would love to be part of this conversation.
Thank you so much, Representative Coulter. And I will say, members, we're going to end right at 12:30, so we're going to keep things pretty brief. But Representative Lee, you're up next.
Great. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, as someone on tax committee and someone interested in tax policy, I just wanted to commend the authors. I know there isn't a bill yet, but I appreciate moving away from the model of a tax credit just because, I mean, we've heard today from all the families that testified, their budgets are really tight. And again, it costs a lot of money. So even if we did have a really generous tax credit, that means these families have to spend money up front throughout the whole year and then wait a whole year to be, you know, reimbursed or to see that refund, right? And so do appreciate that. And I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about that because I know there isn't language yet, but that's actually a real issue for families as well because, you know, you need that money for other things, right? And so do appreciate this new idea.
Thanks, Representative Lee. Yeah, and I kind of alluded at the very beginning to the tax credit. And now, so maybe Representative Katiza Witun, you just comment on that point?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing that up. This is a huge piece of this proposal that these subsidies would go directly to child care providers, and they would be the handout that was created by a number of our advocates doesn't have all the details. Obviously, we're still working on what bill language would look like, but the aim is to pay providers up front and to credit families on their monthly invoice. So, you know, when you get your invoice or whatever it would be, then it would say, like, Great Start Affordability Program, like, minus $100 or whatever it might be, if it's like weekly, monthly, you know. And so we're still working out the details on the frequency of those payments, but it is upfront, so that money is going back into families' pockets right now instead of them having to wait until the following tax year to get that money back. So it is going to make a really big impact.
Thank you so much. So we're getting ready to wrap up here. So Lee Daniels, give you a final word for you, and then we'll go to the bill author of a comment if you do have anything, sir.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thanks for the discussion today. It's definitely an issue for the entire Minnesota for daycare affordability. And the only thing I'd probably say at this point is this: let's not lose sight of the TRIB article that came out on the 3rd of children that are being murdered by, you know, they should have ever put back in their home, and that's, we need to put some more emphasis on that and protect these children that are coming out of foster care, going back to home and being mistreated. So I'll just end with that.
Good. Thank you so much, Representative Daniels. Yeah, plenty of things to be working on. Representative Katiza Witun, and I suppose Senator Housechild, a final word from you, if you can be pretty quick about it.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members, for participating in this conversation today. To all of the families and advocates and providers who elevated their experience and expertise, I think that as we work on shaping the bill language, we're going to need all of that input. And so that testimony is so powerful. And one thing that I do really want to circle back to and flag was that
just how incredible it is. You know, we had mothers talking about how they are, how difficult it is to talk about family planning decisions. People are making a decision how big they want their family to be. Maybe they, you know, when I have a story, you know, my mother was a stay-at-home mom for most of my early childhood. She actually has a degree in early childhood education. She did a little bit of in-home care for some of our neighbors at some point in time, but she told me this story. She was cleaning the toilet. Cleaning one of the toilets. That's one of the things that parents have to do, right? I'm trying to explain to my kids all of the different chores that mom and dad have to do if we don't all chip in and do some of that work. But she said, then you were just there. You kind of waddled into the bathroom and said, Mommy, I want to be just like you when I grow up. And she's sitting there, you know, she probably hadn't showered that day. She's wearing sweatpants. She's scrubbing a toilet. And she's like, I want so much more for you than this, but that's important work. And whether people do it for pay or whether they do it because that's a role in their family household, it's critical. And I think that when kids look at their parents and say, I want to be a mommy or a daddy when I grow up, and they think, oh, maybe I'm going to have one kid. Maybe I want a big family. My daughter told me she wants to have 100 kids. I said, honey, that's a lot of kids. That's a lot of kids. And my kids know really well. I mean, we struggled through some fertility issues. So I told my three kids who were adopted out of the foster care system, I said, you know, mommy's belly doesn't really work that well. So we might not have another baby. And then lo and behold, we did. And so it's just such a blessing that we were not forced to make a decision about our finances and our family planning based upon that. So I think that when we highlight parent choice and family planning, we really want to make sure that families don't have to do that, and that the best way to support them is by making public investment. Every child in Minnesota deserves a great start to life, and we all do benefit directly or indirectly when that happens. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representative Katiza Witun, pardon me. And Senator Housechild, we're grateful to have you. If you can keep it really, really short.
I just want to thank you for allowing me to crash a House hearing on this important topic. I can't do any better than Representative Katiza Withun on those comments. So looking forward to working on this next session and talking to all of you about the idea. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. So members, in a couple of weeks, there's going to be a supplemental budget forecast, and we'll get a better sense as to sort of what the fiscal picture is likely to look like in the 2024 session. But I guess I'm sort of putting a flag down that there's substantial needs in the area covered by our committee. This is certainly one of them. And so we need to continue the conversation. I know Representative Katiza Witun, Senator Housechild, eager to hear input and thoughts about this particular proposal. There will likely be others as well. Let's continue to be in touch. And grateful to everybody for taking the time, including members of the public, for joining us. So with that, members, we are adjourned. Okay, here we go.